He's quirky, he's antagonistic, and Kevin Bartlett says he's very, very unlikable at times. And I won't have it. I quite like the company of Dr. Turf, and he's back with us again. Hello, Turf.
Half, you never showed that, actually. We weren't together years ago, but it's nice of you to say it now.
Well, I thought I'd just sit on it for a bit.
Whitey?
Now, my understanding is you were part of the rocket ship that William Shatner took to the moon and back. Is that true that you were on that ride?
Is it just me, or is that sort of... irk the irrits out of you.
Oh,
that mine's bigger than yours with him and Branson and all that sort of stuff.
Well, Elon Musk,
and
all those blokes.
Seriously, he's gone 60 miles into space, and supposedly, you know, he's gone near Jupiter, basically. But in all honesty, what's he done? He's gone a little bit higher than the slingshot on the Gold Coast.
Correct.
Not?
Correct.
So what is this fixation with it?
I don't know.
We're talking about
what
that
are you trying to
morning.
Achieve?
It's only, they've only really gone to the outskirts of space anyway. They sort of have a little bit of a taste of it, and back down they come.
I don't get the fixation with it, to be honest.
What's 100 k's from here, from Melbourne?
Seymour, I suppose.
There you go. So they've gone from here to Seymour.
Is that right?
In a rocket ship.
100 k? I suppose it is.
I'll take your word for it.
Yeah, about that. Kilmore's about... I always think of it, it's an hour's drive.
And Seymour a little bit too.
More.
And turn right to get to the racetrack. That's the second reason I know. Because they don't go through Seymour anymore, of course.
No, you don't.
So you've gone from here to Seymour in a rocket ship. That's what you've done, Turf?
It doesn't.
Congratulations.
It doesn't seem quite as brave as the Apollo missions.
No.
I must say, you know, I went to the Houston Space Center a few years ago. And I'll tell you how brave those blokes were. The dunny on those rocket ships. You did not have room to move your elbow 1 inch either way, which I would have thought made the whole experience a little bit daunting. I don't know what it was that struck me off.
How do you clean up, Turf?
You know, I wasn't going to go there.
Well,
you've taken it one step too far. I can actually prove it because I actually have a photograph of the dunny in my phone here somewhere.
You took a photo of the bogger.
I did. You know, you have psychiatrists ringing and explain it to me. But it was difficult. It was daunting. It was confronting.
It would have been. Maybe living it.
Particularly if you ate Mexican or something on the trip. Anyway, yeah, the whole space thing. I mean, you know, would you do it?
Australia's going to the moon. You saw that yesterday, didn't you? We're going. Nobody else has been there, though, reckon.
Are we trying to get into the moon dust sort of business or something, are we? But what else is there? Do they leave the flag there?
Well, they play golf
there. Did they leave the flag there? They must have. Because remember they planted a flag.
Well, you've got to leave the flag in when you play these days, too.
Yes, you do. I don't think... Have there been any cases of COVID on the moon?
I don't think there has been.
I'll tell you what, we're in trouble if there has been.
Apparently, there's been some fragments found on the moon from viral...
From the wastewater.
Because they did take a golf club with him.
Yeah, they did.
I can't remember which one it was.
7-9.
No, which astronaut? Who was the one that...
No, I don't know.
Who was the stiff one that stayed on the ship?
The third?
Was it Mike Collins? Was that it? Was that his name?
Great question.
Well, one had to take the photos.
I'm going to
find it out. I guess so. Good point.
Jason Dunstall calls himself that person when he tells stories.
Unless, of course...
Gordon Coventry and Tony Lockett, Buzz Aldrin and... I've lost the... Neil Armstrong. Jason Dunstall calls himself that other guy in the ship.
Really?
I remember the first
Mike Collins, but I don't really...
So what happened with him is, can you just look after the ship for us?
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Not much
imagine if he got out and realised he'd locked the keys inside. But there was a story, quite a big sort of, you know, those people love those conspiracy theories.
Yeah.
And there was one that the whole landing on the moon thing was fake.
Michael Collins, you're spot on, by the way.
And it was filmed. And that Stanley Kubrick, who was one of the great master filmmakers of all time, had been, you know, put his tools
choreographed it
and filmed the whole thing, you know, instead of making some of the sort of famous movies that he made, he just took a bit of time out to do that rort. But that was just one of those ridiculous, you know, it was a little bit like the Harold Holt and the Chinese sub.
It came and got him.
When Holt went missing,
yeah.
I don't even know what are we talking about?
Well, a long time ago.
69 or something? I don't know when it
Stand
was.
By.
But there
back
was,
in the day.
Back in the day, yeah, back in the day. But there was all of those rumours that...
67.
And the funniest one at the time was they'd been picked up by a Chinese sub.
I have heard that story.
Who had somehow sailed into Port Phillip Bay, which is actually the ocean, but down there in Portsea.
Opened the hatch, sucked him in.
And escaped the Fox Mansion overlooking the, Portsea, sort of evaded the security that that facility has, and had picked up an Australian Prime Minister.
Just happened to pick him up.
I didn't bite for a second. I don't know about you blokes.
Just happened to know where he's going to be at the time.
We digress.
But, there is some feedback coming through from the government turf. They are mindful. They're listening. I want you to know that. No one can travel to the moon from or space from Melbourne at the moment.
It's more than 15.
It's outside the 15Ks. And travel time is after curfew. So we can't do that at the moment.
Yeah. So, Turfy, now you know that the bloke, the restaurateur from Melbourne has got 3 months in prison.
Is it worth it?
Well, he's got what? 10, hasn't he?
So, well, yeah, but that's all 7 months is suspended.
Right, yes.
Yeah. So now you know 3 months in jail to go to Perth to watch Melbourne win the premiership and then celebrate with the players in the rooms and then out on the ground afterwards. Mm-hmm. If you knew that was the case for 3 months jail, would you do it?
Unequivocally, no.
Tempted?
Nah. Oh, 3 months in the pokey. Please.
In the pokey.
It's a harsh sentence, isn't it? Seriously. Is it? I mean, I'm not for 1 second condone. There's a fair bit of totter about what he about the bloke. But
I think any
3 months?
Area.
Yeah.
I mean, I know he's breached, one rule after another, one law after another, and arguably jeopardised, I suppose, the health and et cetera, et cetera. But three months in jail?
Well, Sidney Stack was in jail for...
Not that long.
No, but he was there for a while.
He was there for a while.
And then what did he do? Jump over a back fence or something of where he was staying?
He was already there.
Wasn't he? Anyway, now, would I? No, I wouldn't. No.
2 weeks?
Oh, here we go. We're in a barter here. How long 2 weeks. Well, what were the conditions like inside?
Well, I think they're in the low sort of minimum security type set where it's probably reasonably comfortable.
Has he got Sky Channel?
He's got
seriously?
He's got racing.com on his phone. He's got some coverage.
Okay, so
3 weeks for Sydney.
3 weeks for Sydney. This bike's got three. Well, these bikes have got three. On top of the 2 weeks they've already had,
I think that would be included. Yeah.
To be served concurrently.
That's right.
3 months. Nah. 1 month. Oh. Look, without being a smart aleck, I've seen one. A Melbourne flag. So, I know it's been a fair time between drinks. But at least I've seen one in the flesh, so perhaps it's not something that I can, I've got that up my sleeve.
Yeah.
I suppose the question is, how long would you do?
Off the SMS, let us know. 0419 5052. What are you prepared to do? How long are you prepared to wear the stripy pyjamas? Like?
No, it's well,
I can't imagine
security.
H Division.
Is Ronnie Barker in there?
I don't think Ronnie's in there.
One of the great TV series of all time, Porridge.
No doubt.
One of the great
anything that has Ronnie Barker in it's good.
The scene of him being I don't know why we're going. The scene of him being doing his medical is worth watching the entire series over. When one of the lines in there is he's standing there and there's a jar about 10 or 12 feet away that he has to give a sample.
Right.
And the water says, I want you to fill that. And he goes, what, from here?
Did he fill it from there?
No, it was just one of a million great lines in one of the great English comedy series of all time.
Nice work. Turf, what did you make of the 1,000 Guineas meeting yesterday?
To put it delicately, I think it's a reflection of one of the plainer bunch of three-year-old fillies we've ever seen. And the thing is, I mean, the Colts dominated the fillies as two-year-olds. And when you look at Animo and Freddy's...
Artorias.
Artorias. They are a seriously good bunch of three-year-old Colts. They can sprint. Animo Guineas winner as well, heading to a Cox Plate. The fillies were always a bit plain last year, and I think you look at, and I'm not saying Melbourne's any, the Sydney fillies are equally as average, I think. They took turns to win their races. There's been no dominant three-year-old filly. So I think it was just a reflection of a fairly average sort of bunch yesterday. I mean, it was a competitive sort of race.
And, pretty compelling win by Yearning, wasn't it?
No, it was a good win by Yearning. I'm just saying going forward as a form student, I mean, you know, like it's a three-year-old fillies classic and she's a Group 1 winner and all that sort of stuff, but I don't think it'll go down as one of the great thousand guineas as a... because it's relevant for me going forward form-wise. Whereas the colts, you can't argue the quality of the colts.
I was talking to someone about this last night, about the likelihood of a really wet Caulfield Cup. And
is it what is going on? Is it happening? We weren't asked for rain last night.
You need to speak to your brother. He'll be out of here.
Yeah.
We had ran about 20 mils at Caulfield overnight.
Was it? Was that much?
Yep. And there's more rain expected.
Right.
There's more rain expected tonight and then again tomorrow night. Can you remember wet Caulfield Cups over the time?
Yeah.
I mean, the one that comes to mind for me is Viander Cross.
Of course. Lord Reams was a bog.
What about in the last 10 years?
It was
years,
the Gaze one with the brown and the white epaulettes.
Yeah. Descarado.
Descarado.
Henderson colours. That was pretty wet.
That was really wet.
You know, I think there's been... Can you ever remember a nice, warm, sunny day for Caulfield Cup Day?
No, well...
I can't.
It just always.
Well, in 2002, when I got to speak to Greg Childs, I looked at that this morning. That was a nice sunny day.
Yes.
That was 20 years ago, of course.
That was a powerful win, that one. But, yeah, no, I don't. And going through, and I must say I've done a bit of form in the Caulfield Cup, and there's horses that handle slow ground, but there's no compelling heavy track form.
No, that's why I asked you the question.
You know, and in my mind, form-wise... the gulf between, say, dead and slow, or even good and slow, the gulf between slow and heavy is equally as dramatic. There's a million horses handle slow ground that don't go a yard in heavy ground. So it's interesting, because if it gets to nine, let's say, it's going to really be interesting as to, to see who gets through it and who doesn't. And the other thing is, it's race nine. So there's going to be a fair... if it rains during the day, which is the worst thing that can happen to a racetrack, it's bad enough, you know, a big downgrade because of rain overnight and before a meeting. But when it actually rains during the meeting and the track opens right up, it becomes a raffle, I reckon.
Yeah, so incentivised drawing so wide as... now, incentivised was a $1.90 favourite before the barrier draw. Yeah. Now he's pushed out a little bit. History says that they don't tend to win at that sort of price. I mean, it's only happened two or three times in history, recent history anyway.
We very rarely get one that short.
True,
and
too.
He's deserved it. I mean, there's inarguable. He won me over in the Turnbull. The Maccabi was good and everything. The Turnbull was just a fantastic win by a racehorse. And, you know, he deserves his position. I mean...
Gate 20?
Yeah. I mean, I like him and Delphi, and they've got 19 and 20. Maybe it'll be okay out there. I don't know. Way before your time was, I remember How Now drawing Barry. I think they only had 16 starters that year, and she drew 16 of 16, and famously Stocker had her on the fence going past the winning post with a lap to go.
1976.
So, you know, they might just cross and, you know, have lovely runs. You just don't know. It's not like there's huge on pace in the race. I mean, you can't, I'm not even sure who's going to lead, to be honest. But yeah, a little bit awkward out. Of course, they come into 17 and 18 after the scratchings, but it's awkward. It is awkward.
Well, we'll talk more about that through the morning. Greg Childs, one of our special guests as well, to relive the 2002 Caulfield Cup aboard Northerly with the Doctor this morning. But after the break, Matt Stewart's going to join us. Fresh haircut for Matty. Looks sharp. He's our RSN's chief racing editor.
He's just come from Afghanistan as a trooper.
Looks sharp, as far as I'm concerned. Jamie Steer's going to join us as well, because there's been a situation in Ballarat. No COVID fragments on the moon just at the minute, but there might be some Ballarat.
Got a text, we can't go to the moon. You can't go. There's no way to go in the playgrounds. There's a good playground on the moon. No way to go.
Well, if you scan in the code, your QR code, you'll be fine.
That's true.
Dan will be happy with that. All good. Back shortly with Matty Stewart. Nice to have you with us. 23 past 7 on a Thursday morning. Sunny skies in Melbourne town. And Matt Stewart is RSN's chief racing editor, who's jumped in the studio with us with the great Dr. Turf. Hello, Matty.
Hello, Daniel. Doctor.
Matty.
Adam.
He's cast. And you're
put that
not
out of the way.
Whatever happened to that podcast?
That's the niceties for the morning.
Yes.
Where's the podcast? Where's the podcast? He's cast and I'm not.
He was too difficult to work with.
Oh, fair enough.
Seriously, the demands.
Doc was a diva.
I was a diva. We're doing a podcast and he nicks off to his caravan.
And slams the door.
And
he won't come out. Now, listen, there is a serious issue that's emerged, but we've had a few of these COVID-related issues pop up in racing. There's been spot fires left, right and centre, including one or two at Ballarat in the last few months. But last night we learned of that two members of the Mare Eustace stable had tested positive to COVID, which is a bit of an alarming first. Dave Eustace put into isolation. John Allen stood down from yesterday, all amid getting tests for COVID. So we just wanted to get the state of play with where this situation's at and where we go from here. Jamie Steer is the head of integrity at RV, and he joins us. G'day, Jamie.
Morning. How are you, boys?
We're well. Doc's not, but the rest of us are. What's the state of play here, Jamie? Can you just sum up what's happened and where this goes from here?
Yeah, so just to clarify one thing in the intro there, at the moment we only have one confirmed positive case.
Okay.
And there's obviously yesterday, when we became aware of that, we enacted our usual procedures as quickly as we're able to with the assistance of the stables and Ballarat Turf Club and many other people. So we immediately tested a large number of people, around 120 in total. We're still awaiting for the PCR results to come back for those tests. Hopefully they'll be available this morning and through today. We implemented our contract tracing that we do as a matter of routine, and we've identified all the crossovers and contacts, and we've isolated people where we felt appropriate through the level of contact. All those people, as I say, have been subjected to testing. And now we just await the results and we see what the outcomes are. And then we put in place a framework regarding whether people are required to continue to isolate and have further testing. And, of course, it won't be a one-size-fits-all. It will depend on everyone's sets of circumstances. So we go through each individual and assess them. But one of the main things is, at the moment, with the help, as I say, of the Ballarat Turf Club and the stables involved, we've been able to ensure that the horses have continued, or the stables have been continued to able to be operated. There are adjusted work times and arrangements in place, so the horses are getting exercised, and at the moment it's play on.
It sounds like a large number of people, and obviously people will be thinking about containment now. Are you confidently it is contained with the contract tracing, or you know, could this just spread, and will it have an effect on the staff and staff numbers at Mare Eustace? Just on the containment issue there, are you confident that the mechanisms have contained it, Jamie?
Well, Matt, we've shown sort of over the last 18 months that the systems we've put in place and the contact tracing has been effective, and we're confident that we've implemented the correct procedures. I think everyone will know and acknowledge that, you know, when you're dealing with coronavirus, it can be unpredictable. So you can't give a degree of certainty, but you can progress on the basis that what you've done appropriately, and that has produced the correct outcomes in times gone by. But, you know, we wait and see. And as I say, key to how we address this going forward is the results that will be coming through throughout today.
Jamie, do you do this in concert with the government? Do they oversee what's going on, or they just leave it up to the industry?
The government has an awareness of what's going on, but we implement these procedures as rapidly as we're able to, and so we've implemented all the testing ourselves yesterday. But as I say, the government has an awareness, and of course, as always, we follow any government health directives and any notices they send out to the potentially affected people.
I'm trying to think of what a worst case scenario might be. Is there a potential that this may cause any disruption to the spring carnival?
We hope not, Matt. But again, you have to play the ball as it's bowled to you. So we'll continue to monitor it. But what we are confident of is that we've done the correct things so far as we're concerned to ensure going forward. We've got mechanisms in place, as I say, to enable horses to continue to be worked. and exercised. And you've got to remember at the moment, it's situated at Ballarat. So we're confident, certainly, that the racing will proceed as scheduled at the moment. We have no reason to doubt that.
All right, so there is no worst-case scenario where it would cause some sort of major disruption to the Spring Carnival, you're guessing?
Oh, well, there would be. There's always a worst-case scenario. Right. But on what we have available to us at the moment, we're not approaching that point yet.
The Sydney jockeys who are trying to get down for Cox Plates, we're talking about James McDonald, Zaki, Hugh Bowman, Karen McAvoy for Spanish Mission. Is there any update on their application?
I'm not across any update of their application, and I'm not sure whether it was progressed overnight, but no doubt further information will become available in relation to that today if it has been approved.
Thanks, Jamie. Appreciate the update.
You're welcome.
Good stuff, Jamie Steer with us, Race Victoria's Executive General Manager of Integrity. It's something that one of the big feature weeks. We don't really need this going on, Matty.
Well, I just, Doc, I don't. When I'm trying to think of worst case scenario, say if when he said 120 people were tested, it was like, wow, this is a, you know, you think of, well, what if 40 of them turn up positive? With the vaccination, the stressing of now of getting to 80% vaccination, is it less of a concern now with high vaccination rates, or is it still potentially disruptive? I'm still not quite sure.
No, me neither. The whole thing bamboozles me. It appears our response to it has changed a little bit, and perhaps the gravity seemed, despite the fact that, you know, the Delta strain was far more virulent than the previous strain, there seems to be a more acceptance now of getting on with things, and I wonder whether that would be.
And we're so close to that level now of opening up,
don't go there. We
are close.
What do you reckon, Whitey? Does it sound volatile, or does it sound like they've got it under control?
I think everyone should be nervous because it's such a big stable, and they've got, you know, so many horses that are going to so many races every day.
How disruptive is it to staff numbers and so on? Can they function in the same way?
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, and such a big training centre up there as well. So you do get nervous. I got more nervous because of the when you're talking Mar and Eustace, because it's just such a big operation.
Yep.
You do tend to get a bit more nervous when it's such a big operation.
Well, I think we're going to just find out a lot more throughout the day. I guess that's what's going to happen.
Well, you'll be giving us all the news on that through the day, Matty. I'm looking forward to that.
I'll be in and out.
I can't wait.
Oof, I'm already...
And we just can't wait for you to take your cap off.
One of the kids...
Well, explain it.
I can't reveal it. It's too grotesque. One of the kids said, because I was looking Father Christmassy,
as he said.
He said, let's have a little crack at this. And I was sort of just oblivious, sort of got lost in the moment, sort of thought, he knows what he's doing. He's 15. And he got rid of the sideburns, and I look like a complete idiot. Well, and I'm going to start, the cap doesn't cover it, so I'm going to go the hunt, you know, the Daniel Boone down
yes,
the sides
down
job.
The sides.
So I'm going to look even less special.
Sort of dumb and dumb. Fair to say, the kid didn't have much to work with. Come on.
It's an improvement.